The chemotherapy drug cisplatin is a widely used and very effective medicine that is given to pediatric cancer patients as they go through their individual cancer treatments. Unfortunately, this drug can cause hearing loss in as many as 60 to 70% of the patients that are being treated with it. Once this hearing loss takes place, it does not return. On today's podcast, I will speak with Fennec Pharmaceuticals Director of Marketing, Eric Meyer, and their medical liaison, Holly Reams, as they will discuss the many ramifications that hearing loss can create over time for these patients as they get past their cancer battles and try to live as normal of a life as they can. Thank you for listening to this podcast. The chemotherapy drug, cisplatin, has proven to be a very effective and successful medicine to treat many forms of pediatric cancer. Unfortunately, it can also cause hearing loss for these kids who are undergoing treatment, and this hearing loss, if it happens, will be permanent. Here to talk about this very difficult issue are two people. The first is the head of marketing for Fennec Pharmaceuticals, Eric Meyer. And the second is Holly Reams, who is the medical liaison for this company. And I would like to introduce both of them to my audience and welcome them to my podcast. Thank you very much for being here and for joining me.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us, Mark.
Now, we're going to get right into this very serious problem of hearing loss from what is known as cisplatin-induced ototoxicity. If I pronounced that right, which I was close, but probably not perfect. If you could first talk about the chemotherapy drug cisplatin and the positives it brings to the table as far as helping pediatric cancer patients deal with their various forms of cancer.
Yeah, Mark. And again, thanks for having us on the podcast today. I'll take the high level and then Holly can dive in more into the science. But you know, the bottom line, when you're talking about childhood cancer, we're getting to a point now where there's 80, 85% survival rate in many of these cancers. And as treatment advances, there's these indispensable components. Cisplatin is one of them, right? It's a very effective chemotherapy. It's been used for decades and it works. Question is, when cisplatin builds up in the inner ear, those tiny little hair cells in the cochlea that are, I mean, they're basically formed by the time before a baby's born, they're formed like at 23 weeks. So those tiny little hair cells in your cochlea are affected by the leftover of cisplatin, the free radicals, and the platinum buildup. And it doesn't circulate. It doesn't, you know, the body doesn't clear out the inner ear very well. Well, that's what causes ototoxicity. So the benefits of the drug are enormous in multiple tumors. Question is, can we address the hearing loss issue at the front end of treatment rather than at the end? Because as little as one dose could affect a patient given age and various other factors from either mild to moderate or severe hearing loss in as little as one dose. Now you're dealing with a cycle of chemotherapy. It becomes very important to really look at the potential for hearing loss case by case.
Okay. Now, are the kids that are given this drug only dealing with solid tumors, or are they also given the drug when they're dealing with blood cancers such as leukemia and lymphoma?
Well, I can take that question. Cisplatin's been primarily used in solid tumors, but there are some incidences where it can be utilized in hematologic or blood cancers. But to date, they're more commonly going to be seen in patients with solid tumors, but a wide range of solid tumors. So that can include your germ cell tumors, like your testicular cancer patients or ovarian cancer patients, as well as hepatoblastoma, which is tied to the liver, medulloblastoma, which is a type of brain cancer. So you can see the variety of tumor types that cisplatin is used in. And to Eric's point, it's a very effective drug for a lot of these tumor types. And so it is still readily used pretty heavily across multiple solid tumors.
And does this hearing loss also affect the patients who are getting treated for blood cancers?
It can. If it's given in the intravenous form, we've seen hearing loss, to Eric's point, in patients as early as the first dose. It is very dose dependent, meaning the more cisplatin you're exposed to, the greater incidence of the potential for hearing loss.
And this all has to do with the fact that cisplatin has platinum as its either main element or one of the things that it has. And it gets caught up, apparently, in the hair cells. If they were left alone, hair cells are there to make sure that any one of the children can hear properly. But when they're affected, that's when things go downhill. Is that correct?
Correct. As Eric mentioned before, the body just doesn't have a great way to clear the inner ear. There's not a lot of fluid flow through there or blood flow through those structures just because they're so tiny. And so anything that affects that area ends up almost being trapped for a certain period of time. And so that's why you can see the hearing loss become progressive with subsequent doses of cisplatin.
And have there been any testing done? My guess is that there has been, that there is any possible other material to replace platinum in the drug that they're using, or is that just impossible to duplicate?
I'm sure there's been plenty of studies. There's obviously numerous chemotherapies that are now available for different solid tumors. And so for some solid tumors, there are other options. Another agent by the name of carboplatinum is also a platinum-based agent and has also been shown to cause some potential effects on hearing as well. And so sometimes we see physicians who may start a patient on cisplatin and start to notice some of these side effects, and they may decide to change course and switch to a drug like carboplatinum because it is a slightly lower platinum-based therapy, or they may switch to a different therapy altogether to avoid the platinum use. But for a large portion of solid tumors, cisplatin is still kind of the number one gold standard for treating those tumors. So it's a little bit hard to get around depending on the tumor type.
Now, you mentioned before that the more cisplatin that a pediatric cancer patient takes, the more likely this hearing loss will occur and the worse it will be, which seems pretty obvious. And then you commented that this hearing loss, or Eric might have commented, that this hearing loss can begin with just one dose of cisplatin. If you stop at one, will the hearing loss still be persistent, or might it go away at some point?
So I'll take that again. What we know from cisplatin is that once the hearing loss begins, it is permanent and irreversible. So even if it's a mild hearing loss, so maybe they lose some high frequency hearing, or maybe they report tinnitus or tinnitus, the ringing in the ears, that can be a very early sign of hearing loss. And in some patients, that may be as bad as it gets, but that's usually persistent. It's usually bilateral, so both ears. And unfortunately, even with the discontinuation of cisplatin, it does not typically improve.
Now, how quickly, generally, does hearing loss take? I was reading when I was doing some preliminary work on the podcast, some people who don't understand the situation think that maybe a child's not paying attention, you know, to detail and stuff like that, and isn't taking it seriously or whatever it is. Are there regular signs? You mentioned tetanus just a second ago. Are there regular signs that you could see this happening?
I'll take a shot at that. Go ahead,
Eric. No, go.
Well, what we've seen, I handle more of the commercial side of the business, and I go out and I see and talk to patients, and some of our patients have had, you know, therapies to prevent hearing loss, and then other folks we interact with did not, right? So they're suffering from this. And it could be as simple as high frequency hearing loss where they start to lose particular things, you know, birds or songs or a particular, you know, a particular person's voice that has a particular, you know, frequency per se. So it's hard to tell at the beginning, but one of the most dramatic things we've seen is folks who go through treatment who were not briefed on the fact that this could be a possibility. And it's just an awareness issue, right? I mean, oncologists, God bless them, they're out to save lives, right? So the first order of business might not be the hearing, because they're dealing with cardiac toxicity. They're dealing all kinds of things in a patient. The conversation up front to say that this could potentially happen if you're on this therapy alleviates, or at least gets them starting to think that this could be an issue. But it could be as limited as just having trouble in noisy places. It could be tinnitus ringing in the ears, or it could be profound 85-88% hearing loss where you're to hearing aids and cochlear implants. It's just really a broad spectrum of how it affects people.
Ear, that was mentioned before. Will this ever go away, or will it go away when the person loses his or her hearing?
So it can be progressive. So obviously, tinnitus is kind of one of those first symptoms that would be assessed as a physician's giving cisplatin when the patient's coming in for follow-up. It would be kind of one of those questions they would be asking. Any changes in your hearing? Do you notice any ringing in the ears? Things of that nature. And it can progress from there. So if they continue to get cisplatin, they're continuing to experience hearing loss, that tinnitus will go away. And unfortunately, the hearing loss will progress. I think to Eric's point, what this also brings about is the importance for baseline screening. So cisplatin guidelines do recommend getting a baseline hearing screen for patients prior to initiation. But although that may not be extremely possible for certain patients, sometimes getting access to a hearing screen is not so easy. But it is a recommendation to have a baseline status quo, so to speak, so you can kind of compare as the patient moves through treatment and have an idea to determine if there's a new change. And then continued follow-up, I think, is also something that is really important and also stressed by the NCCN guidelines to continue to monitor patients for potential hearing loss as they move through treatment and even into survivorship.
Yeah, and there's another element to this, Mark, where the younger the patient, right? Think about a 15-year-old kid, maybe a young man with testicular cancer or something. Their auditory and vocabulary skills are effectively built, right? But a 2-year-old might be learning their vocabulary, right? How to communicate, their auditory skills. And if that's interrupted permanently early, boy, then you really have a developmental issue. And the long-term effects are dramatic in terms of learning, employability, social awareness, emotional intelligence. All that becomes a real factor in the younger ones.
Well, we're going to get into some of those questions a little bit later in the podcast. What percentage of patients that take cisplatin develop hearing loss?
So I can take that. From a percentage point, a lot of the data that's been published is mostly in the pediatric population. And what we know is around 70% or even greater patients can experience hearing loss with cisplatin. And then more recently, there's been a few studies looking at patient-reported outcomes, even in the AYA or the adolescent young adult population, for patients who may have had like a testicular cancer. And for those patients in survivorship, they're seeing percentages of anywhere from 60 to over 70% of patients that are reporting some form of hearing loss. And so that can be, again, kind of a high frequency hearing loss or a low grade hearing loss, all the way up to complete hearing loss. So there's definitely high incidences of it. It hasn't been studied at high rates in adult population, but definitely in the pediatric population, we see pretty heavy numbers there.
Well, that's very, very troubling figure, of course. Now, have there been any cases at all documented that once a pediatric cancer patient loses their hearing, it ever returns, or have you never seen that happen?
I have not had that reported by any physician, and frequently I meet with physicians and kind of ask about their experience using cisplatin in patients, and those that have experienced hearing loss in their patients have all reported it's permanent.
Now, are there any forms at all of pediatric cancer that are more prevalent to cisplatin causing hearing loss, or is each cancer just as susceptible to hearing loss as any other cancer?
I would say that's a tough question to answer. There's definitely different tumor types that have been studied a little bit more heavily. I would say in the medulloblastoma as well as hepatoblastoma, those rates are pretty high. But in some of those other tumor types, there's just not enough data to really state if it's consistent across all tumor types. But we do know the greater exposure to cisplatin, just based on the pharmacokinetics, the greater chance for hearing loss.
I'd like to expand a little bit on some of the real issues that this permanent hearing loss causes, as Eric just mentioned, which can be very difficult to overcome, including speech development, educational development, social success, and work success, to just name a few. Is there one of those that you consider to be the most prevalent thing, or perhaps the most important? They're all important, but one that really can do a number on these kids as they get older and try to get into society.
Yeah, I'll start, and then maybe Holly, you can weigh in. This is an important issue, important element of this, Mark. I had a conversation with a young man recently who has what we would call severe hearing loss from cisplatin therapy. And part of he's 24 years old, and part of what he's dealing with is, you know, really directional hearing, being able to tell kind of where it's coming from. And then also, now he has hearing aids. And when you go into a noisy place, the noise is amplified by the hearing aids, which makes it very difficult to interact. So I don't know that we have specific data on the prevalence of each one of these different issues, but socially, the impact on this young man is tremendous, because he just can't connect with people, because one person's saying talking over here and he's looking over here, or in a noisy place, he can't track the conversation. So the social impact really is very important, because it affects employment. It affects romance. It affects interacting with your peers. I mean, everything. Yeah.
Well, I know that I've done a lot of podcasts on different cancer issues, and brain cancer, medulloblastoma, of course, is one of those most important brain cancers. And I was interviewing a woman who didn't have medulloblastoma, but she had a brain cancer. And when she tried to get hired from just a fairly regular job that she wanted, she found a lot of pushback, in that she had something that it wasn't necessarily hearing loss, but when these kids go for interviews and they have a hearing issue, I would say that would be almost the type of thing that would disqualify many of these kids who may have the ability, but just because of this serious issue, cannot find a job that they would like to do.
Well, you would hope that it wouldn't disqualify them, right, Mark? But a lot of it is what I've seen being out there talking to patients and families is that these young people, they just regress. They stay home because they can't navigate. It's just too difficult, you know? So I think it certainly would be a factor, especially if you're in a job that, for example, a young man I keep mentioning, their family owns car washes, and there's times when the alarm, like a car will be in the going through the car wash, and for some reason something's not aligned, and the alarm bells will be going off about, you know, readjusting whatever they do to readjust the track, and he can't hear it. And meanwhile, somebody's in their car in the car wash. So just that, you know, and that's a car wash, and it's, you know, like missing alarm bells when something, like missing a fire alarm, right? Something like that. So they tend to regress, I think, and kind of go inward, and ultimately sort of are less connected to society and culture.
Now, I watched a video in which the pediatric cancer patient named Jake, who is a survivor of testicular cancer, had taken 7 doses or rounds of cisplatin and found out that after waking up at one point, he had completely lost his hearing. Now, what seems to make this situation even worse is that the mother was explaining, and again, you had mentioned this before early in the podcast, that they had never been told about the possibility of cisplatin, that it could cause hearing loss. How often have you heard that particular scenario, and what type of responsibility should the doctors take about specifically not informing their patients of this danger, even though it is written somewhere that this could happen?
Well, I think it's just a simple fact of the matter that medicine is complicated. And an oncologist, especially a pediatric oncologist, they have a single charge, and that is help that family have their baby, their child, for the long term. The good news is we're addressing side effect all the time. And some of these things need to happen on the front end of treatment during the planning process, which is why you're starting to see audiology come into the conversation. And Holly, you should weigh in here too, because you're in the trenches in the field. My sense is there's really not a culprit. It's just a function of the complexity of medicine. And of course, everybody would want to treat everybody and make everybody perfectly healthy and survive and all those things. But sometimes the cardiac element might be just way more risky than the hearing loss element or something. So you end up with this sort of complicated chess match of treatment and quality of life and survivability and downstream. And it's just not simple. So that's why there's a need for awareness about this. Right, Holly?
I would agree. Yeah, I think to your point, medicine is very complicated. A lot of the agents that we treat cancers with today carry a lot of risk for potential adverse events and side effects. And so as a clinician, as someone working with patients, there's a lot to inform. And sometimes those conversations maybe not be as long as they need to be, or maybe some things may get missed because of the stress of the situation as well. So I think from the care provider's perspective, they often revisit these things, just like Eric mentioned. As patients come in, they're going to continually reassess. And I think the advantage that we're in this day and age is that there is a much bigger focus on survivorship than there ever used to be in the oncology space. And so we're starting to see not only survivorship clinics popping up with a lot of our larger institutions, but specific staff that are fully focused on survivorship after therapy. And so having those pieces in place, I think, are going to help to increase awareness about a lot of these things. Platin's been around for a very long time, and I've heard clinicians say, well, we know hearing loss is an issue, but it's something that we have to take have the chance at curing this patient's cancer. And so it's kind of like you're weighing the good and the bad and how much you can do and how much you can prevent. But with a multidisciplinary team approach, which is what most clinicians are going with these days, I think we have a better opportunity of doing baseline screening, being able to monitor patients through their therapy, and then also provide that support post-therapy into survivorship.
Well, Jake was also talking about putting on hearing aids to help him, and he found... and I don't know if this was the patient, Eric, that you were talking about before. He found it to be very difficult to have these hearing aids, because we went into public. The noise outside was so loud that it was almost impossible for him to hear. So he took them off. Is it fair to say that hearing aids, by and large, are not going to solve the problem even close to adequately to satisfy these kids who have the hearing issues?
Well, why don't I give you the stats, and then Holly, again, add to it. But what we have in some of our material that talks about the cost of hearing aids being, you know, upwards of $6,000-$7,000 and may or may not be covered. And then over time, there's some Canadian data that says, you know, lifetime costs of hearing loss could be $400,000-$500,000, right? So the impact of this is tremendous. Whether or not the technology evolves to sort of solve it, hopefully. But again, those tiny little hairs in the cochlea are fully developed and permanent by the time the fetus is, 23, 24 weeks, and that's it. That's what you have for your lifetime. And so protecting becomes the issue rather than restoring, really.
What about cochlear implants? Is that a possible solution at all, or does it pretty much compare to hearing aids as far as something that really isn't going to work long-term or at any term?
I mean, they're definitely a tool. I think that's the way I kind of view hearing aids and cochlear implants. They're never going to restore natural hearing, but they are a tool that can allow the patient to have a more normal, so to speak, survivorship, But it's never going to equate to normal hearing. And so to Eric's point earlier, there's always going to be this social stigma associated with it. And I know he's done interviews with numerous patients who've had hearing aids and cochlear implants. And it, while it is a tool to help them continue to grow and move past their cancer, it's not as easy of a fix as we'd hope it would be.
Now, we've discussed a little bit about something that is an absolute must, and that's educating parents and caregivers on trying to prevent this hearing loss before a child begins his or her chemotherapy regimen. Now, when pre-screening or audio baseline testing has been done, has that helped to reduce the hearing loss in that they'll get more of a profile of the patient? Has that been proven yet, or is it still something in progress as far as or work in process or in process?
I think if it's done correctly and if it's done at recommended intervals, I think it's definitely a way to identify hearing loss early. So some of those symptoms that occur early on, maybe that very first sign of the tinnitus, the ringing in the ears, to reevaluate and do another hearing screen on the patient at that time, regardless of what dose of cisplatin they're on. It definitely gives us a better idea of how much damage has already been done. Because unfortunately, as we mentioned, with cisplatin, once that hearing loss has occurred, it's non-reversible. So I think having a baseline is extremely important because some patients may come in with the degree of hearing loss that they had prior to initiating therapy. And so if we know where they're starting from, we know where the potential is that they could go to. And so we have the opportunity to then intervene or do something preventative prior to the therapy in order to reduce the chance of developing hearing loss.
Now, the other thing that's been mentioned is you want to have hearing tests before, during, and after treatment. My question is, if you do it during treatment and you find that things are going south on the hearing loss, is that when the time is right for an oncologist to switch from cisplatin to another? You'd mentioned that there were a couple of more treatments that you could.
So it depends on the tumor type, but there is potential to possibly switch to another therapy depending on the type of tumor that the patient has. But I think it's a case-by-case basis. The physician's going to look at that specific patient, their specific tumor, and determine if they should continue with cisplatin because the success rates with cisplatin are that much greater, or does the patient have the potential to have the same outcome if they were to switch to an alternate therapy? But in some tumor types, cisplatin is, again, the gold standard, and so many physicians will opt to stick with cisplatin because they have the greater opportunity of providing that patient with a cure.
How recent has the problem with hearing loss being associated with the use of cisplatin come to the forefront?
That's a great question. I know it's been an issue for years. In terms of therapies available, it's relatively a recent development. I mean, cisplatin's been used for what? Decades, Holly, right?
It's been around for, upwards of 25, 30 years. So it's been around for a long time. But to Eric's point, there hasn't been a whole lot of development early in the use of cisplatin and ways to prevent the hearing loss. And so over the last 10, 15 years, there's been a lot more research looking at ways to prevent ototoxicity in association with use of cisplatin.
And has it become more public now than it was, say, 25 or 30 years ago when you first noticed this or when it first started?
Yeah, I could say anecdotally. Like, for example, like, again, I'm the one out talking on the commercial side and with patients and whatnot, but we hear consistently that parents find, you know, when they're diagnosed, let's say with a child or an adolescent with a medulloblastoma, they'll end up on a Facebook page with other families and they'll be talking about hearing loss and preventative treatment and audiology. So I think that conversation has grown a lot in the recent years anyway. I don't know that, I don't have the background 20 years ago in this, but I know recently it's increasing across the advocacy spectrum and the social spectrum.
Now, I'd like to ask both of you really about the Hennigan study that I was trying to comprehend. It's a little bit difficult for a layman like me to understand what was going on, but I did get a number of points that I certainly understood in the conclusion part of it. Now, the study claimed that the writings about this problem are underdeveloped, and there's not been enough research done on this cisplatin hearing loss problem. What would your response be to that?
I can say I would personally agree. I think it's a tough outcome to measure, depending on the age of the patient. So those hearing screens that we kind of mentioned, depending on the age of the child, there's different hearing screens that are recommended. And so that's been one of the biggest challenges of a lot of the clinical trials looking at hearing loss related to cisplatin, is being able to continually complete those exams, because specifically for infants, for children under the age of 2, many times those children will have to be sedated in order to perform some of the specialized hearing tests. And so you can understand for parents and for those infants and toddlers, that can be a challenging test to have to go through to have your child sedated in order to do these hearing screens. As patients get a little bit older and they're, 10, 12 years of age, it's a little bit easier because they can respond and answer questions a little bit more readily. So actually completing the test is more feasible. But what we've seen in clinical trials is that it's often easy to measure early on, but as patients progress, they're now cancer-free, so to speak, and they're doing a little less follow-up with their clinician, it becomes harder to do that long-term follow-up as well, kind of in the real-world space. Again, I think it goes back to awareness, reminding folks that cisplatin does cause hearing loss. This isn't anything new. This is something that we've known about the drug for a very long time. But just reiterating the importance of starting that screening wherever you can, even if maybe you don't get it at baseline, start the screening and start monitoring, because we know that the drug works well. We know cisplatin works really well. So there's a very good chance that these children are going to live long, extended lives, and we want them to have the best quality of life they can.
Is cisplatin given during situations, not when the cancer is localized and treated successfully, being, say, an 85% treatment success rate, but when the cancer metastasizes? Is cisplatin still given during that occurrence?
Yes, it can be. NCCN guidelines for many different tumor types do also include cisplatin as a secondary agent for patients with progressed disease.
Now, the Hennigan study also claimed that there is a critical problem as to a lack of standardization, and that contributes to a lack of clearly understanding the problem. Would you agree with that?
I'm fairly new to the ototoxicity and the hearing screening world, but there are different tools, different tests that are utilized, and different criteria. And so with that, you can have some inconsistencies with how things are applied. I think as this becomes, folks become more aware of this, I think we'll start to see more standards of care, so to speak, where institutions are relying heavily on one particular screening based on the age of the patient.
Are there any other conclusions that study made, things that you either were not aware of initially, or really stand out for you as issues that have to be addressed that we have not already discussed?
I think we've covered a big chunk of it. Eric, anything you would like to add?
Well, I think you sort of mentioned it, Holly. It's as this clinical awareness grows to protect hearing, there's going to be multiple studies, audiology scales, until it sort of kind of comes together as a more of a part of the protocols, it's going to be pretty wide. Frankly, that's where it's at. I mean, there's, medicine's still an art, right? It's the practice of medicine. So that sometimes you have to do things for particular patients that are not exactly within protocol. And as you study especially young kids, you know, survivorship is number one, and you don't want to upset that rate of survivorship no matter what you do. So progress in these things takes time.
Now, before I ask you about Fennec Pharmaceuticals, in this problem with the cisplatin and hearing loss, have you seen or heard of either any positives that have come out in the last few years, or reversely, any negatives that you are more concerned about now than maybe you were a few years ago?
Well, I can say from the medical side, one big positive is the amount of research in this space. There's definitely been a lot more research probably within the last 5 to 15 years, looking specifically at different agents to combat ototoxicity. So that is a huge positive, because it's obvious that people have identified this as a longstanding issue, and patients deserve better. So we need to find tools that can be better utilized to reduce the risk.
And are you satisfied at this point with the awareness that is now out there on a public basis versus what might have been out there 5-10 years ago?
It's better. I mean, these, like I keep going back to these folks I talk to, you know, if they're able to go out on a Facebook page and they hear people talking about this issue, and they're able to get information, which they are now, that's tremendously positive. So the growth has been very positive and fast and rapid and across the board. There's certainly ground to cover.
Now, we have not touched on Fennec Pharmaceuticals and what your company has been involved with as far as your mission, which is dedicated to improving the lives of children of cancer who are experiencing hearing loss. Where can people read about Fennec Pharmaceuticals and read about some of the work that you have been doing and will continue to do in response to this cisplatin issue, and what has created hearing loss over the past number of years?
Yeah, thanks, Mark. The best place to go is fennecpharma.com, which is Fennecpharma, Fennec Pharma. And Fennec, it's actually a fox. It's a fox that has these big ears and can hear for miles. And so our logo is a fox with these big ears. And so it really has an application to what we do. The company's been around for more than a decade. We're a small shop. There's only 25 of us, I think, in the whole company. But we're dedicated to one thing, and that is working on this issue of hearing loss caused by cisplatin. Yeah, but all the information's out on fennecpharma.com.
I'd like to ask you and ask Holly as well. Now, you before coming to Fennec, you had your own business, I believe, for a number of years. What made you join Fennec, and what has been your experience there for the last, I think it's been June of 2022 that you started there?
I've been at Fennec, 18 months? And I've been in pharma forever. My entire career, and mostly large companies in multiple sclerosis, neurology, Parkinson's disease, psych, you name it. This is the most interesting journey by a mile. We're small, we roll up our sleeves, everybody's involved in everything. And frankly, the cause is, I mean, it's sort of an all or nothing proposition, right? Either there's awareness in these young people and their doctors and pharmacists and everybody kind of align and have the right mindset about treatment, or the downstream effect could be terribly negative and long term. So it's very dynamic, and I'm glad to be here.
Holly, I'd like to ask you the same question. How long have you been at Fennec Pharmaceuticals, and what has your experience been? You're a medical liaison. You have a tremendous amount of knowledge, and I'll just present the question a little bit differently. How optimistic are you that what your company offers down the road is going to be a real change maker for the pediatric cancer community?
Well, thank you, Mark. I appreciate the question. So my background is actually in nursing. So I started out as a bedside nurse about 17 years ago. And then quickly moved into clinical research because that was my passion. So I worked in clinical trials before I made the leap to the pharma world. And I've now been working in the medical affairs side of pharmaceuticals for about the last 6-7 years. And so my passion has always been for the oncology patient. From the minute I started working oncology, we can do a lot of good for patients, but there's a lot of therapies such as cisplatin that can pose a lot of challenges and a lot of risk for patients. And so having been at the bedside, caring for patients, hearing their reports of how their therapy is treating them, that's what drives me. And I've been with Fennec just since December, so I'm pretty new to the team. But I was encouraged to come here by other colleagues of Fennec because of the passion and also the drive. And having had a little bit of experience in the pediatric space, I felt like this was a place where I could inject my background with oncology, also utilizing my experience working in rare disease to help bring more awareness to this problem. So,
well, it must be such an exciting feeling. Yeah, you got 25 people that work there. It's a very small place, but hopefully you're on the cutting edge of at least a few things which are going to make a real difference to these kids. And once one of them at least comes through, I can only imagine what a great feeling of accomplishment and pride you will all take in that. And I just want to ask one more question. And have I missed anything about talking about this problem that I should be asking you? Because occasionally I forget to ask something.
You know, it's been a very thorough conversation. I don't think you've missed anything. The only thing I would notice, just like you said, one person treated, you know, one mom and dad out there talking about a positive outcome can change the world, right? So it's really about conversation and awareness and exactly what you're doing here, Mark. So we're grateful.
Well, the thing is, you know, and thank you for saying that, but I talk to, as I said before, I talk to a lot of parents, and hearing loss is almost always one of the side effects that these parents mention. And I'm not sure that the awareness of the seriousness you mentioned, the economic issue, $500,000+ over a lifetime that these patients are not going to earn because of this, and all the other social issues and the education, it's just so important. And the more that we get the word out of the importance of this, the better it's going to be for the pediatric cancer community. So as we come to the end of the podcast, I want to thank both of you very much for taking the time, you know, to come on my show and discuss what is a critical part of this pediatric cancer journey for parents and kids. And I want to wish both of you and Fennec Pharmaceuticals the best of luck as you continue on a daily basis to fight for these kids. If you could just repeat the place to get in touch with you one more time, because it's really important, and I want that to be the last thing that people hear.
Yeah, thanks again, Mark. FennecPharma.com. F as in Frank, E-N-N-E-C-P-H-A-R-M-A, FennecPharma.com.
Well, I want to wish both of you the best of luck, and thank you again for joining me, and have a great day.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
I hope that you were able to appreciate how difficult this hearing loss can be for pediatric cancer patients and survivors, as they can be basically excluded from doing many things that are available to the vast majority of the population. Hopefully, a solution for this issue is not too far away in the future. This is Mark Levine, and please tune in next Monday when I will speak with Morris Ahern, who is living in China with his family when his 1-year-old son Micah was diagnosed with neuroblastoma in 2010. Most unfortunately, Micah passed away when he was 7 years old in 2016, and Morris will talk about his beloved son and how his food background has played a major role in honoring the memory of Micah.